It's 2 o'clock. Just out of curiosity, before I start the meeting, Haley, are there any members of the public hanging out there in the wings ready to participate?
You mean for public comment?
Uh-huh.
No.
Just in general. Yeah, Harry, if you click on your participants down at the bottom, you see the participants thing?
I know. I'm looking right now. Okay.
If
and
you
it,
click
says
it,
six,
there's
it says
two,
16 people.
Okay, that's panelists. If you go over to attendees, you've got two of them. If you click on attendees, you'll see the other folks. See, right now I can see three attendees.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Boy, so Don, you're totally on top of it. Thank you.
I've had a lot of experience lately with this. I was swimming yesterday with 200 people from around the world, so it was kind of interesting.
Wow. Well, I want to thank Christine, Jen, and Karen for tuning in. And we'll enjoy the fragrance of your cookies, Karen, even if they're not visible. Thank you. All right. So I'm going to call this meeting to order. And as we've been doing lately, we haven't done the Pledge of Allegiance for a while. We've been doing other observations of America. We started with Woody Guthrie's This Land Is Your Land. We did America the Beautiful. I thought today that we would do a quote from, since we're in this major transition of consciousness here in the United States of America, if not on the planet, but especially what's been initiated here, I thought we'd read this quote from Reverend Martin Luther King. And I hope that everyone is feeling comfortable with this particular option. So if we don't mind, I'm going to start right now. And these are the words, like I said, of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I refuse to accept the view that mankind is so tragically bound to the starless midnight of racism and war that the bright daybreak of peace and brotherhood can never become a reality. I believe that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word. So, thank you, Doctor.
Amen.
All right, moving forward, we have a quorum and then some. Haley, do we have any, or members of the board, do we have any agenda review or additions and deletions? All right. Well, hearing and seeing none. Oh, I should let you be doing introducing of all this, Haley. So why don't you go ahead and introduce the commission report and the esteemed Mr. Niffen.
President Farmer.
Yes, Director Rice.
Just really quickly, and we don't need to do it today, but it might be helpful to have a little thing that we can have Haley read at the beginning of the meeting describing how people who would want to participate in the meeting can do so. Yes. She can list the email address and or phone number. I mean, obviously, we don't have to give how to connect to Zoom, but how to participate, it might not be a bad idea to let people know how that process works.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Director Rice. That's a good point. And remind me again before the next meeting to make that point.
Yes, sir.
So, I don't know if a sir is necessary, but so Haley, if you could, give the email address for the district in case there are people that are observing and would like to make a public comment, and they can do that in the meantime while Steve is giving his report.
Sure. Members of the public can submit written public comment to boardcomment@cambriacsd.org, and I will read their comments during the item.
Okay, thank you very much, Haley. Okay, moving on to item number two and the commission's report. And Steve, we see you out there. If you would unmute yourself. And go right ahead.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me. I don't, have a lot to report on the overall feeling is, you know, we're just being careful with what's going on and not moving forward too rapidly on any one item. A couple of things from past events is we've heard back from the grant application that we put in for the County Board of Supervisors beautification grant. And we heard back from them. We didn't hear yes or no. We just heard back they wanted more information. So that was kind of a good sign, but at least it wasn't a no and they wanted more information. So Carlos provided that to them. And then we've also heard that there's been a certain rumble of money maybe being available in a small amount in the budget coming up in the future, which makes us happy, and we'll worry about that when we actually get it and can use it. Still looking at the bathrooms as our major project and just putting the skate park / soccer field on hold until some money fell out of the sky. If a big pot of money fell out of the sky and we had to make decisions on that project, we would do that. But until that time, I think it would be prudent just to hold on. So we're doing that. And then we were still looking at the entry on Piney Way and the gate across Piney Way and the access and egress, whatnot, through that piece of property, and in regards to just public access from our point of view, which may not be as important as fire access and how the fire safety committee views that road in the overall plan of fire, you know, evacuation plans, whatever. Now I'm kind of babbling, but that is on there, and it's really beyond the purview of our commission. We don't really have any power. The least amount of power is saying, hey, we want to walk our dog up and down there. The most, you know, important thing is fire at some level. The sewer is there too. So that's one thing. And then the final thing would be the homeless issue. We were kind of, you know, I don't want to say asked or tasked or told to look at the homeless issue through the policy committee, which we gratefully did. And we're, you know, like every other government agency in the whole wide world, we're just going to kind of push that off and say, we didn't really feel like that was on our plate. If the board felt like the PROS Commission should be tasked with forming some kind of homeless policy for the district, we would probably do that because we were told to, but not with, you know, but, you know, it's a big issue and we're struggling along as it is, and we don't need to be tasked with that. With that being said, I feel like I've talked long enough. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Steve. Any directors have any comments or remarks for Mr. Niffen?
President, I'd like to ask him a couple questions.
Sure.
I'd like to get an idea from the PROS Commission as to what's next on their agenda that they need money for, and get some kind of an idea as to what monies that they need. In other words, for the soccer field, if we were to turn the old skate park into a soccer field, is there a broad number of $100,000 or something that we could throw at that to say, okay, that's what that's going to cost us to do? On the skate park itself, how much would we have to pay to get the initial plans done so that we could move forward on that when we're ready to cough up some more money for you? So I would like some guidance prior to the August final budget, because I, for one, would like to get more money in this year's budget, or actually next year's budget, for the PROS parks and recreation stuff. And we can only do that if we have some ideas to what things are going to cost.
So, awesome. I have the answers to that right now, because I love to shoot estimates around, because I think it's easier to work that way, right? People say, oh, I don't know what it costs. And I say, well, you know, it's not $1 million. Is it five? It's not five. It's not $1 million. Is it? Yeah, right. So let's say this from all my understanding, and it's not written on paper anywhere. The bathrooms are going to cost $250,000. That's not with the plans as much because we've already paid for a little. But the building itself, let's say $250,000. This, okay. The soccer idea is about $150,000. We think we could do a skate park for maybe $100,000. And what was the other thing? The planning on the skate park might be about 10 or 12. You know, people say, oh, we could do that for free. But if you want to do it for free, then you get that. If you want to pay a professional company to come in. So those decisions. The skate park, I think, is a little less expensive than the soccer situation. I think that overall decision is really going to come down to use and how many people respond and raise money on their own, kind of. I don't want to say first come, first serve, but whoever dropped the money on that first would certainly have a foot up on that project.
Okay, but is there a possibility of having this soccer facility where the old skate park was and then building a new skate park over by the dog park?
Yeah, I think that would probably be those numbers would be the same. If you were allowed to build the skate park on Fiscalini Ranch, that might be the real issue with that situation. But as far as my opinion on that would be, well, then it would be time for the community to consider a change to the overall plan. You know, maybe people are freaking out that I'm saying that, but I just feel like it's okay to put a little skate park over there. And believe me, it wouldn't be some huge thing. It would be a little thing at first. So, yeah, that would be up to you guys if you wanted to make those decisions. Because to change that plan is going to take more than the PROS Commission to say that.
Okay. Well, thanks for the budget estimates on those. That helps us out a lot.
Yeah.
President Farmer?
Yes, Director Rice.
Just a quick question. Steve, if we were to move the skate park and we were to put it in the area where the county used to store their vehicle, their heavy equipment and stuff that they no longer do. I haven't been down there in a while. So I know the Fiscalini Ranch border ends at a certain place, but can you speak to that a little bit?
Not necessarily, because I'm not completely familiar with the way the lot lines are down there. But yes, that kind of stuff is true too. That's a very good point. Yeah. It's like, yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's right next to the park, but you know.
Yeah, if that was, we haven't looked at it that specifically.
Well, thank you. David,
Director Rice, can I get some clarity as to where you're talking about?
Okay, so you know where the old water yard is? That's now the facilities building down there on the east ranch.
By Rodeo Grounds Road.
Yes.
Yeah, it's between where you come across the bridge, the pedestrian bridge, and okay. Where Rodeo Grounds Road is.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. That'd be a great spot.
So, Steve, if I could just ask you, and I don't know if we want to spend too much more time on this issue, but with regard to the skate park, I seem to recall, and personally, I'm very favorable toward the skate park. I think it's a great outlet for the young people in the community and anywhere. But I seem to recall that when there was an effort being made to determine if, in fact, there were enough people wanting to have a skate park, and so there was contact made with the high school with regard trying to find out how many youngsters really were concerned about having the skate park. And there was very little response from the youngsters or their parents. I seem to recall that took place. But then recently we've heard from Buddy Campo saying that he had a number of supporters that wanted the skate park, but we haven't heard from Buddy again. Do you have any comment on what I just said?
Yeah, the skate park contingent is out there. we've heard a little bit more about them. You know, I think my overall feeling about that is it's just hard to really hear from that group. It's small, but it's a worthy event. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying build something huge, but something little. It's almost more like just giving the kids an area that they can call theirs, that they can go to, exactly. You know, and when they're there, and if a group comes along later and wants to do a little more and add a little more to it, you know, it's not something that lasts forever. They kind of, you know, they move on and change and whatever. But I think I like what we're talking about on the utilities area. It's kind of tucked back there. It's out of the way, you know. And I'm not a huge, you know, believer that, oh, a bunch of bad stuff is going to go on over there because it's over there. You know, bad stuff goes on everywhere.
All right, Steve. Well, thank you so much. So once again, I'll ask any further questions or comments of Mr. Niffen. All right, Steve.
President Farmer, I do have a member of the public that wishes to speak.
All right, thank you, Haley. And that would be?
Tina Dickinson.
All right, Tina, go right ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Haley. Thank you, President Farmer. On this item, I have a thought. If the skate park is going to be torn down and relocated, couldn't the CCSD then sell that property as a means to aid future plans and goals on East Ranch for sports facilities? Why would we have a piece of land just sitting there doing nothing when we could sell it and use it, since money is always an issue? Steve?
Oh, that's way beyond my pay grade. But I'll comment on this, Tina. I do like the idea of government selling assets to pay for things without having to do it. But if we were going to put the mini soccer field there with the skate park, it would be both things. So we wouldn't want to sell it.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Steve. Thank you, Tina, for your comment and suggestion. I see no further comments on this particular item. Is that right, Haley?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So thank you, Steve. Have a good weekend, buddy.
Public comment.
So moving on to public comment. And Haley, we have how many requests to speak?
I do not have any requests to speak on the public comment. I do have other requests throughout the agenda, and I'll let you know when I do have those.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
President Farmer, I was under... There's a hand up.
Yeah, it looks like Ashlyn Snow now wants to speak. Ashlyn, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Okay, I think I just unmuted myself.
Can you hear us?
We can hear you.
Okay. Perfect.
Hi, so this is Ashlyn. My name is Robert Malone. This is in regard to the crosses that were hung at the skate park. Last week, she and I built several memorial crosses inscribed with the names of people of color who've been killed by police and hung them up on the fence there, which to my understanding is CCSD runner owned, so public property, in other words. And they were taken down within a few hours. And we called CCSD, I believe, on Friday.
Friday.
But no one there really seemed to be able to tell us what regulation we'd violated or anything like that. We were told we could pick up the crosses and someone would speak to us in person. But when we went down, there were a couple of workers there who were very friendly and helpful, but no one in a position to tell us any sort of regulation that had been violated, anything like that. So we subsequently hung them up at the spaghetti bowl at the end of town, thinking there's already signs there, so it should be fine. But now I'm hearing rumblings that maybe they're going to be taken down there also. My concern is not really for the crosses themselves. It's not a whole lot of work to build a cross. It's just two pieces of wood. But my concern is that the right to peaceful protest, I think it's fair to say, is sort of under attack in this country right now. And before I hung up the crosses, I did what I could to look into any sort of regulations they might violate, The California laws I could find prohibited hanging of signs on private property or other people's private property or on public property if they were advertising, which obviously these weren't. The only thing I could find for specific Cambria regulations led me to a dead link, so I can't say if they violated any Cambria regulation. But given that the right to protest is protected by the First Amendment, any such regulation itself would be questionable under the Constitution. I'm not a lawyer. I have an undergraduate background in political science and constitutional law, but I'm by no means an expert. But the point is, I shouldn't have to be an expert. A citizen should be able to have a peaceful protest without having to be a legal expert and knowing all these ins and outs and navigating all this. It should be a really simple thing to do. And these memorials were utterly peaceful. They were deliberately made in such a way as to do zero damage to any property. And yet they were removed with, I'd say, unusual swiftness for, I mean, I don't hate the government or anything, but that was pretty swift for a government act. And so I guess what I'd like is some clarity on why they were removed. And also I'd like to see what the CCSD can do to protect people's fundamental constitutional right to peaceful protest going forward.
Thank you, young man. Get your name again, please. And it's not Ashlyn, obviously.
Robert Malone.
Young man?
Robert Malone.
You know, first, I don't think I'm in any position to speak with regard to the CCSD. That I would leave that to our legal counsel, Mr. Carmel. But I would say this, that the fact that there have been various posters right there at the corner of Cambria Drive and Main Street, and they've been there for weeks without any real difficulty. So I can't necessarily comment on why what you did seemed to be annoying to some folks, especially since, like you say, it's a First Amendment right of free speech. Tim, do you have any comments to make on this at all?
Thank you, President Farmer. That's district property, and it's not considered a traditional public forum. It's not been designated by the district as a public forum, although the district certainly has the right to do so. That has other issues associated with it. And I think the general practice of the district is signage is not allowed on district property. I don't think there's any specific regulation. It's just not considered a public forum. Again, the board can certainly agendize this and discuss it and determine that it should be a public forum. And then it will be a designated public forum. What comes with that is it'll be subject to strict scrutiny. And so essentially anyone that wanted to put a sign there, no matter what it said, could. We wouldn't have the right to take off any signage. That's the downside of having a designated public forum. Of course, the upside is it's a wonderful place for the community to share its thoughts and feelings. But as of now, that's not a designated public forum.
Thank you, Mr. Carmel.
President Farmer?
Yes, Director Wright.
I also heard them ask why they were taken down. Maybe that were there complaints or something that might be helpful for these folks to know. So if there was something objectionable, they could change and still create a protest, but not post it there, at least until we figure out what we're going to do.
Well, it's unfortunate that they were taken down. You say, Robert, you say that they were taken down. Obviously, I shouldn't be really asking you questions. You just made a public comment, but it's unfortunate that they were also taken down up at the Spaghetti Bowl. I'll just say this, from what I understand, there's been a lot of controversial comments going back and forth on social media with regard to this very same issue. And obviously, what you might see as voiced in a public forum such as Nextdoor or whatever, people might go decide that they're going to act out what they feel and believe, as well as just making a comment on, like I said, social media. So
I just wanted to, the reason I ask is because this is an opportunity for staff to say we took it down because it's not a public forum, or to say that somebody called and complained or Carlos drove by. It would just be helpful to know, why they were taken back down. I understand there's lots of reasons why it might have happened, but this is the time to clarify.
We had complaints at CCSD.
Say again, John, could you repeat that, please?
Yes, we received complaints at CCSD.
You did receive complaints. How many complaints?
John?
I couldn't hear that.
More than three.
I see. All right. I think this is a suitable for a future agenda item, and it's sufficiently important. I'd like to see this on next week.
I would second that if we need to do it later. If we need to do it at the end of the meeting, we can do that, but I would definitely second.
Okay.
The only thing I would ask is the agenda is already finalized. We're publishing tonight, and I'm going to be working on that after this meeting's over. So if we could possibly put it on the 25th agenda, which is the special meeting at 2.
Let's see.
No, we don't want to put it on that agenda. Let's move it. We can move it till July.
I think it needs to come sooner. I really do. This is too important, and people are too hot right now.
I agree. I don't know. But getting because it is a complex issue, getting the information from district council to our staff. Maybe Mr. Carmel can speak to maybe putting out a report that isn't in the original agenda, putting it onto the agenda, but then the staff report can come a little bit later, like maybe Monday, maybe late Tuesday or something like that.
I can accommodate that. It's a very complicated subject, as you probably know. So it probably won't be a robust staff report, but we can certainly put something together.
I think this is important, and it gives the public a chance to really weigh in on this, because things are just too hot right now. I don't think we can ignore it, whatever we do. And I'm not proposing any particular thing, but I don't think we can just kick this one down the road.
No, I would have to agree. I don't know if the term too hot is necessarily the right terminology to use, but I just want to say I admire the passion of the young people that are doing this. And I also want to comment, both Director Rice and myself were at the protest gathering and march this past Monday at the Vets Hall that went down Main Street and back. And it was very well attended by folks of all ages. There were young people, moms with their children, teenagers. And it was just a very heartwarming experience. And I feel that the passion and participation of the young people needs to be acknowledged, and acting on this in a timely fashion is something that would be well served for them. So, like you say, Mr. Carmel, if you could somehow pull something up that we could have available within 72 hours of the meeting next week, we could do that.
I think Cindy has her hand up, sir.
Thank you very much. Yes, excuse me. Unless you're raising it like this, Cindy, I don't see it on the
When I do that, you don't recognize me, so I thought I'd try the hand on the screen.
Oh, okay, sorry. I'm writing notes, so I'm not necessarily looking up, so my apologies.
So there was something else that was mentioned in the conversation, and that had to do with the area across from the skate park where there are posters that are placed in the ground, signs that are placed in the ground. And I guess I'd like some clarification about whether that CCSD property, with it being right next to the sidewalk like that, I'm inclined to think that's probably county property or an easement of some kind. But that may be something for clarification in the information that's being put together, just so that we understand whether or not there are two different sets of circumstances that would be ruled by the same consideration. That's my only thought.
Well, it would appear, let's put it this way, that it looks like public property, but I guess we would need to determine that at some point. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Vice President Steidel. All right, moving on to item number four, hearings and appeals.
President Farmer. Hands
up. Yes, Haley.
We have two members of the public that wish to speak on public comment.
Okay,
two more.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
The first person is Margie Sesser. Margie, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go right ahead, Margie. Thank you.
Okay. I just want to tell you how proud I am of the young people in our town, Ashlyn Snow and Bobby Malone, who has had the conscience to construct these crosses to honor the young Black lives lost to violence and brutality. I think our community is a very caring community. Some people may have the misconception that only entitled white people live here, but this is a village where there is a need. Cambrians do step up. Look at our community support for the families affected by the pandemic. Nearly 200 Cambrians showed up on Monday for the peaceful Showing Up for Justice protest in March. I want to be clear that I don't think anybody thinks these crosses condemn police officers, but honor young lives that ended because of the color of their skin. And cities and towns across our nation and other countries are erecting murals and other memorials to honor George Floyd and the many people who have lost their lives because of the color of their skin. I think that we as a community are showing support to Black Lives Matter by the symbolic peaceful tribute. As we think of the horrible events that have triggered this movement, I think we are, as a community, are saying enough is enough. And we appreciate your consideration in letting things like this be able to show everyone who we are as a community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sesser, for your very thoughtful comments. Haley, you have a another request to speak in public comment?
Yes, Tina Dickinson wanted to speak, but she lowered her hand, but let's allow her to talk to make sure.
Thank you.
Tina, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Yes, I'm unmuted. Thank you, Haley. On this item, one of my daughters and I attended and participated in this rather remarkable for Cambria, 200 people showing up, as President Farmer mentioned, very young children, medium age, and we more elderly folks. But I can honestly tell you, to be part of it and for it to be so amazingly peaceful and obeying every law, it was quite something. I think it is, when I think about what the district did, when they had these great big banners outside their offices facing Main Street, great people doing a great job for a great community on CCSD property. Think back, folks, about what happened then, and nobody said a word. They were hung up there for years. Under the current leadership, they are no longer there. But just remember what happened on CCSD property and what happens at the Spaghetti Bowl all the time, and nothing gets taken down. So how dare this happen? And it does need to be addressed. And I thank Director Howell for urging this matter in a more urgent fashion. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tina.
President Farmer?
Yes, Vice President Steidel.
I just wanted to take the opportunity to say also that it would appear from what's been offered that the actions that were taken to remove the crosses had to do was something that was on CCSD property. And free speech is absolutely free speech. But when you say free speech, that means free speech for everyone. So it also implies there are things that may be put up on that area that would a number of people in town would find very distasteful. So I think that, you know, it's just my opinion, but I think that probably the district was taking that step because if it satisfies something in one direction, it has to satisfy something in the other direction. So you can't be choosing what it's going to be. The second part that I wanted to make a statement about is that I certainly don't want there to be an inference that CCSD or the board in some way doesn't believe in the sanctity of the information in terms of Black Lives Matter of what was being put up with those crosses. It was literally just an administrative action, I think. It wasn't a comment on what they were or a value statement about what they, sorry, this one bothers me, about what they were, because that isn't who we are represented as a district, I believe, or as a board. So I wanted to have the opportunity to voice that so that people didn't walk away with the feeling that somehow we were trying to project anything else or that we didn't value the things that are going on in our country right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Stidell. Obviously, we're not necessarily supposed to remark on public comment, but this I would say that this is probably an exception to the rule. I would just say this, that, and I'm probably going to get some blowback on this one, but it's really unfortunate that, as General Manager Weigold pointed out, we had at least three people call and complain about the fact that the signs that were put up, the crosses that were put up right there by the on the fence by the skate park, they found them offensive. And I don't know what that's a statement of, but. Anybody else have any further comments on this particular item? And we will be addressing this at next week's regular meeting. So,
I'm not trying to defend those people who complained, but some people may have problems with crosses because of the religious significance of that. Mm-hmm. So that may have been part of, you know, some people have different religious views and would see those as not being appropriate. So,
yeah. Well, perhaps
finding those things out will be helpful for all of us, I think.
Yeah. You know, I think perhaps by putting this on the agenda for next week, it will give the folks who weren't comfortable with that, give them the opportunity to come up and speak to this agenda item and let us know why they voiced a complaint, so to speak. All right.
President Farmer?
Yes, General Manager Weigold.
We just, through our safety network, we just received a hold-in-place order as an active shooter is in process in the Paso area.
Again?
So if anybody's listening out there, you should shelter in place currently.
I believe it's in the San Luis Obispo area.
Well, there was a shelter in place for in Paso yesterday, wasn't there?
Yeah. Right. It's in San Luis Obispo.
I'll defer to the chief took the message. Chief, you want to speak with us?
There is currently an active shooter scenario going on in Paso Robles right now. LA law enforcement is involved in searching for the person, and they've issued a shelter in place order for Paso and surrounding areas.
Mm. All right. Thank you, Chief. Thank you, General Manager Weigold. And obviously, this is just an ongoing situation from yesterday morning. And even though they've identified the person, they're unable to locate this individual. So we can only hope that this situation gets rectified as quickly as possible with no harm to life or even property. So, all right. Once again, and thanks for everybody. Thank you for all the folks that participated in the public comments on this particular item that we've just discussed. This free speech item, I guess you would say, this very timely. So, Haley, should I allow you to introduce moving on to hearings and appeals? Or General Manager? Yes.
You can go ahead and introduce the item, or you can ask John to.
Why don't I do that? I've already babbled way too much. General Manager Weigel, would you introduce this item, please?
Certainly. Agenda item 4A is a public hearing to discuss and consider adoption of Resolution 24-2020, confirming 2019 fire hazard fuel reduction itemized report of the Cambria Community Services District. We're going to conduct a public hearing to consider the itemized report on costs incurred during the 2019 fire hazard fuel reduction program on parcels that were subject to clearing under CCSD's fire hazard fuel reduction contract. We'll first open the hearing and receive any public testimony and consider any objections from affected property owners. Haley, do we have any public testimony?
We do not have any public comment on this item.
Okay, in that case, then we can close the public hearing and make any modifications to the itemized cost report the board deems necessary.
Any members? Director Rice.
I want to make sure we've got the right APNs included here. I would move approval of this item subject to removing any APNs that have done clearing, because that's my understanding. There may be some that were, is that right or wrong? Is this list the correct complete list, Mr. Weigel?
Correct. It's been reviewed by multiple parties.
Okay, great. I move approval.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Thank you so much. So it's been, the motion's been made and seconded. Haley, could you do a roll call vote, please?
Sure. Director Rice?
Aye.
Vice President Seidel?
Aye.
Director Howe?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. All right. Yes. Did you wish to say something, Director Howell? No. Okay. All right. So moving on. You can get that phone. All right. Moving on to item 4B, and General Manager Weigel, would you introduce this one as well, please?
Yes, Mr. President. The agenda item 4B is a public hearing to discuss and consider Resolution 25-2020. Approving a fire suppression benefit assessment, consumer price index adjustment at the rate of 2.1% for fiscal year 2020 to 2021, and confirming the itemized report to collect the assessment on the county tax rolls. First is to receive the staff report, which you have in front of you, and open the public hearing, and then receive any public comment. Haley, do we have any public comment?
I do not have any public comment on this item.
Okay. Then we will close the public hearing, open it to the board for discussion.
I would move approval of Resolution 25-2020, approving a 2.1% CPI adjustment in the existing fire suppression benefit assessment rates effective July 1, 2020.
Thank you, Director Rice. Do we have a second on this, please?
I'll second.
Thank you, Vice President Steidel. So, Haley, would you once again do a roll call vote in the same order?
Sure. Director Rice?
Aye.
Vice President Steidel?
Aye.
Director Howe?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
And President Farmer?
Aye. All right, moving on to item 4C, and General Manager Weigel, would you go ahead and introduce this item as well, please?
Yes, President Farmer. Agenda item 4C is a public hearing to consider adoption of Resolution 26-2020, confirming the itemized report to collect delinquent solid waste collection and disposal charges on the county tax rolls. First step is to receive the report, again, which you have in front of you, for the itemized report of delinquent solid waste collection and disposal charges. And we will open the public hearing and now take any public testimony. And Haley, do we have any public testimony on this item?
I do not have any public comment on this item.
Okay, we'll close the public hearing and open the discussion for the board's consideration.
Does anyone on the board wish to make any comment on this item?
Nope.
I just want to make a remark for what it's worth that there's only three of the seven people on this list actually reside in Cambria. And one of them, who I somewhat know personally because he's lived in town for probably as long as I have, right now happens to be a homeless individual. And as far as I know, isn't employed either. So just wanted to make that observation. And I don't know if I think some of these people are even on the list from last year. So that's their situation, if I'm not mistaken. So does anyone wish to make a motion on this particular item? Anyone on the board?
All right, I'll do it. I move adoption of Resolution 26-2020, confirming the itemized report to collect delinquent solid waste collection and disposal charges on the county tax roll.
Thank you, Director Howell. Do we have a second, please?
I'll second.
You're on a roll, Vice President.
Apparently.
Yeah. So, Haley, go ahead and call the roll again, please.
Sure. Director Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Seidel?
Aye.
Director Rice?
No.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. Thank you. So now moving on to regular business and item 5A. And General Manager Weigold, would you introduce this item, please?
President Farmer, agenda item 5A is discussion and consideration of approval of amendment to the Resources and Infrastructure Committee bylaws. The staff is recommending that the board discuss and consider approving the proposed amendment to the Resources and Infrastructure Committee bylaws.
Thank you.
Turn it over to Haley if there's any public comment.
I do not have any public comment on this item.
Well, thank you, Haley. Why don't I turn this over to Director Pearson, who happens to be the chair of the R&I committee, and see what comments he has. David?
Yeah, we were just amending the bylaws in order to allow us to change dates on the calendar and stuff more than anything else. There's also one grammatical correction there. But it was brought to my attention by Director Rice that perhaps we need to discuss a little bit whether each subcommittee, each standing committee needs their own bylaws, or whether the bylaws that we passed back in July of last year that were comprehensive for all of the standing committees should be the bylaws that they go by, and they really don't need to be amending their individual bylaws because they've been superseded basically by the bylaws that we passed in July. Personally, I feel that's probably a good idea. Then they're all the same, and the only changes would be that the individual standing committees would have their own goals and objectives if they so desired to have those. But maybe a little discussion on that.
President Farmer?
Yes, Vice President.
I would have to agree with you on that. I do think that having the consistency across the committees for the bylaws portion other than their own objectives and essentially mission probably is important, even more than the fact that it's nice to have consistency. I think it's probably important because we could be put ourselves in a position where the individual committees are almost operating autonomously with each other and nobody knows what each other's rules are or how they're operating. And that would be at a very far worst case condition, of course. But I think the consistency of having the bylaws be the same across the committees is important. Relative to this specific amendment, the only thing that I will mention is that at one point when we first established the committees, we took into consideration the timing through the board calendar. And this was a lot more important during that formulation of the CIP when things were evolving out of R&I and then were coming into finance. But there is kind of a step function if R&I is taking a look at something and it has to migrate over to finance and then on to the board in terms of timing of when the committee meetings are held. So we'll have to be sensitive to that between the two committees with R&I choosing to establish their committee up front and not as set week or day of the week.
Mr. Ryder, ahead, Director Howell.
Just a question to I'm having trouble with my mind here, to Director Steinel. The last sentence, could you repeat that? I thought I had your meeting, and then by the time I got to the last sentence, I kind of wondered, would you mind just repeating?
Okay. When there are actions that have to be considered by both R&I and finance before they go to the board, the placement of the R&I meeting with the finance committee having to follow, and then the timing for the development of agenda items and moving it forward to the board, you can get into a situation where you end up pushing something out 2 to 4 weeks because of the timing between the committees. Mm-hmm. So it's just, and it isn't that it can't be accomplished, it's just that we have to be sensitive to each other's timelines and or potentially, since there's generally a fine handoff between R&I to finance, finance may be put in a position of having to have special meetings on a fairly regular basis.
Yeah. Thank you. So if I could comment briefly, then. I see that. And I think probably, especially with those two committees, because it's that whole, their external processes that drive what those two committees do. It seems to me, as it's happened in the past, I don't think that it's probably reasonable to put something in bylaws regarding that, other than to indicate that the two committees need to coordinate.
Oh, I agree. Yeah,
that's kind of, and this is particularly again because of we are in our infinite wisdom where we've had one board member as the chair of each committee does make it possible to have that kind of a negotiation. So that's my response to that. So the other thing, just in general, is it seems to me a common set of bylaws makes perfect sense for a couple. For one thing, just to avoid confusion, and I don't really see that the subject matter of the three committees are sufficiently different that they would require different rules of procedure. On the other hand, though, I think it is legitimate for a committee to recommend to the board a change to the bylaws, and I think that is the spirit in which I would take this particular item. The only other thing I want to say about that is that what the bylaws that are in our packet are not the bylaws that actually got passed in the June meeting. So what can I say? If we were to go forward with this, I think we probably would need to go back to the bylaws we actually adopted. This is actually an older version. And the reason I can tell that is because of the reference to Robert's Rules of Order. That was changed, and that was a change at Director Rice's insistence, or suggestion rather, to be Rosenberg's rules. Yeah, right. So what I'm thinking is that the R&I committee, in their, what they've done here is they're looking at an old version of the bylaws, and so that probably needs to be. Well, I guess my question would be: is that, does the requested change apply to the true bylaws and not to this as well? And I don't know if we can answer that right now without. I think maybe you should go back to the R&I committee again.
Yes, Director Rice.
I don't think it needs to go back to the R&I committee. I'm super grateful that all of the standing committees contributed to getting us to a point where we could have a consistent, consolidated standing committee's bylaws. I think if what the R&I committee is trying to accomplish is to change how the dates are scheduled, because whatever, you need to change the date. I think we could accommodate that request, but this particular version is not the version that we should be doing it to. And I would have to look back to the July bylaws that we approved to know how meetings are set. I thought they were set the way that the board sets it in January every year. We get the list of dates and then approve them. And that process seems to work okay for the board. I don't know how that would work for committees. Perhaps Mr. Carmel could comment. I just don't know.
Certainly. I think it would accommodate the committees too. I don't see any problem. There is some problems with the language that's here that'll have to be addressed, if you'd like me to go into that.
No, well, I don't think we need to do that.
I don't.
Yeah, I think based upon our discussion, these bylaws that are in front of us are really null and void, because we should be going by the standardized standing committee bylaws that we passed by resolution back last July, which has a provision for the committees making their own calendars, and also has the proper provision for Rosenberg's rules. Yep. So I think if we just, I don't know if table this or just let this go, and I'll go back to the committee and get the committee to understand that the bylaws that pertain to us are the ones that were consolidated and passed by the full board, and that we can just set our dates by resolution when we need to.
Yeah.
I can always tell when I'm sure that I've got the right copy, because there are a lot of copies of this that went back and forth. The final approved copy of this actually has an annotation at the top of the page that says that it was approved as of the July such and such board meeting. And that's right at the top of the page typed in. And that's how I can always tell that I've got the right copy in front of me.
Yeah. What a concept. That's great. Well, one thing we could do then, perhaps, if Director Pearson, if I could suggest, if the R&I committee then sees that the change does need to be replicated into the official bylaws, it could easily go on our consent agenda for next meeting, or any meeting, because it's we've already adopted the bylaws, and that change is not a material change if it's needed.
Agreed. Thank you.
Well, thank you, President Howell, for that timely suggestion.
I'm afraid you just promoted me there, Harry.
It's not a problem. Oh. So
it's Cindy's turn.
So it's we're just going to table this item and obviously not bring it back again. And next week we'll. Director Howell, what was it? We're going to bring this back in consent agenda next week with regard to the updated bylaws.
If it's needed. It may not be needed. As Dave says, or as Director Pearson says, it may already be sufficient. If the R&I folks don't feel they need to change, then we don't need to look at it.
Right. Thank you. So, Mr. Carmel, do we need to do anything official to totally dismiss this particular item or just move forward?
No, President Farmer, you can just move forward.
Thank you.
President Farmer, I do have two members of the public who wish to speak on this item.
Okay, go right ahead, Haley.
Okay, the first member of the public is Tina Dickinson. Tina, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Thank you, Haley. I would just say that I would concur with board members that would agree that all of the standing committees should have the same bylaws and no need to keep complicating everything. There are other issues and items on this, but I'll save it for when you bring it back, because what I printed out today are your bylaws approved on 3/19/20. So I don't know if that's what I'm supposed to be looking at, or is there something else? This is a whole package I printed out today of your bylaws.
Oh.
Which is the current one? Can someone
please tell me? The board bylaws are different from the committee bylaws.
This is the Cambria Community Services District bylaws, March 19th, 2020.
We're talking about the bylaws.
Those are the board bylaws.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Director Rice, for that clarification. Thank you, Tina, for your comment. You say there's another public comment, Haley?
Yes, Karen Dean would like to make a public comment. And Karen, would you please unmute yourself?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Thank you.
Okay, I think part of the reason we brought this up was when we looked at the meeting schedule at the beginning of the year, we knew right then that there were two dates that were not going to work for some of the people on the committee. And by giving us a little bit of leeway in setting the schedule in the beginning of the year and not tying us down specifically to a certain, it's going to be the same day of the week, but not a specific week of the month, that we were able to accommodate those people that we knew could not attend a specific meeting without having to notice a canceled meeting and then notice a special meeting. At least that's what I thought the reason it came up was. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you. So there's no further public comment on this item, and we're just kind of letting this item pass into the wind, so to speak. So let's move on to item 5B, and General Manager Weigold, if you would introduce this item, please.
Yes, President Farmer. Agenda item 5B is discussion and consideration of adoption of Resolution 27-2020, declaring a continued local emergency in the Cambria Community Services District due to the coronavirus pandemic. Staff is recommending that the board discuss and consider adoption of Resolution 27-2020, declaring a continued local emergency.
Thank you. So does any of the board members wish to comment on this particular ongoing item, or would someone like to make a motion to approve this? Director Rice?
I had asked that this be taken from the consent agenda so that we could get a report, an update report on what the district is doing with the additional authority that is afforded by such a declaration. I'm fine with waiting on that, but I wanted it to be clear, and I don't think it should be on consent because the board needs to consider whether the additional authorities afforded to the general manager and to the district because of the emergency still exist, and get an actual update if there's any additional authorities that are needed based on the emergency going on.
Thank you. Yes, Vice President Steidel.
So I think that's an excellent point, Director Rice. And I'm wondering where there are circumstances that, since we have our board meetings every 2 weeks, since there are circumstances where there isn't any additional action that's been taken at all. If that's part of the body of the agenda item and the recommendation, that perhaps then it could be kept on consent, and that otherwise then it would provide the opportunity to have the information be part of the agenda item data and right up front.
No, that would definitely help, because any information that we can get about, I mean, there's things like there's emergency grants through FEMA. There's all kinds of things that having an emergency declaration, I went through the last one we had for the drought, having that emergency declaration is necessary. And even if the state lifts an emergency, we don't have to, but we could also lift ours before the state does. So having that information in the staff report, Vice President Steidel, is an excellent suggestion, because I'm not trying to make General Manager Weigel justify the continuing emergency, but to let us know that it is still needed, because here's what I've done with it, because otherwise there's no reason to have an emergency declaration, even though there's still a pandemic happening, among other things.
Thank you, Director Rice and Vice President Steidel. I think it would just be helpful. I one doesn't want to assume that everyone that lives in Cambria or everyone that is attending this particular meeting is already aware of the circumstances here in our community with regard to the number of cases and that type of thing that have taken place since the pandemic began, let's say 3 months ago. Maybe getting an update on the cases, number of cases in town. I will say this, that observing more and more vehicles in town during the week, I'm assuming it's locals as well as people that are visiting. I would just want to encourage everybody that is out there, especially in the downtown area, to wear a mask and be very thoughtful of others. I mean, that's what we're needing to do during this period of time. And I don't see everybody doing that. And that's a bit troubling. We've been very fortunate in this community that early on we had, I believe, 3 or 4 cases, and that hasn't changed. And we would hate to see that change. So I would just hope that people would use more thoughtful behavior as we move on, and be grateful that at least here in Cambria, even though the cases are slowly increasing in the county, they're not happening here, and be thankful for that. So seeing no further comments on this, would anyone like to make...
Mr. Weigel's had his hand up.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. General Manager Weigel, go right ahead.
Mr. President Farmer, so we still are under 5 cases in the community since the start of the pandemic. And we had, for our pop-up testing last Monday and Tuesday, we had a total of 356 people tested. They're experiencing some problems with the vendor, so not all results are back yet. They're working through that. But they did know, this was the county, that we were the busiest community testing site so far in the entire county.
Well, just goes to show you, these people, when people think old folks are just staying at home, well, apparently they're not doing that all the time. Sorry about that. But yeah, we're a pretty alert and involved community in many ways, and this is another example of that. So thank you, General Manager Weigel.
So, President Farmer, I do have a member of the public who wishes to speak.
Thank you so much, Haley, and that would be?
Christine Heinrichs.
All right. Ms. Heinrichs, go right ahead. Thank you.
Christine, go ahead and unmute yourself.
I don't have a comment on this.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
All right. No problem. Just a slight misunderstanding. No big deal. Yes, go right ahead, Director Rice.
I would move approval of resolution. Which one are we passing? 27-2020?
Yes.
All right. Do we have a second?
Second. Oh, no. Yay, Don!
All right. You know, I don't know if anybody noticed, but if you go to attendees, The second one down now is BW,
World Watcher.
World Watcher.
Watcher.
So, I hope that attendee is, well, I just thought I'd comment on that. So, Haley, would you please call the roll, please?
Sure. Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Howe?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Vice President Seidel?
Aye.
And President Farmer?
Aye. Let's move on now to item 5C. And if General Manager Weigold would introduce this item, please.
Yes, President Farmer. Agenda item 5C is discussion and consideration to appoint an ad hoc committee to review Ordinance 02-2020, amending Sections 4.16 and 4.20 of the Cambria Community Services District Municipal Code relating to retrofit inspections and verifications. Staff is recommending that the board form an ad hoc committee to review Ordinance 02-2020, to review those sections of the code per your discussion at the May 14th board meeting.
So I see Director Rice has her hand up, and go right ahead.
First, a question. I'm not sure why this was recommended to be a board ad hoc committee versus maybe a subcommittee of the R&I committee, but I'd like to speak to the experience I had as a member of the Water Emergency Alternatives Resource Committee, Solutions Committee. I don't know. It's a long name for that committee. And we spent almost a year and a half reviewing the parts of the I don't think we were looking specifically at the retrofits, but we were looking at some of the parts of that program. And it took a while just to get up to speed on what's there. And so it's possible that this could be done by a subcommittee of R&I if there are enough people that aren't already working on 17 things. A board ad hoc committee could be helpful, though, because it's more direct. But there's a lot of weeds in this one, just like with the affordable housing. There's a lot of weeds, and if we could somehow get that some of those weeds cleared up prior to having board discussion, it might be helpful. But it's just a thought. I don't object to doing it with a board ad hoc committee.
Well, Director Rice, thank you for, since you were, you know, board president for 2 years, you have a little bit more, experience in this particular area. So thank you for that. Does anyone else, yes, Director Pearson?
I think since it's an ordinance that we're looking at and not, you know, something, a policy or something like that, I think an ad hoc of the board is a better working group to look at this. And I look through these ordinances, and these are definitely weedy. And I think this basically came up because the staff gave us a change to how the verification and inspections were going to go. And I think that needs to be the initial focus, is, okay, does the new way that the staff wants to move forward on verifying and inspecting for these retrofit points and for the program, does that make sense? And does it conform with the existing ordinances? And if it doesn't, but we like it, you know, should we change the ordinance or change the new form, so to speak, and process? So I think an ad hoc committee would work well, meeting with the staff, understanding the new process that they came up with and the new form, and then reviewing it and coming back, maybe not be July, but certainly in August, and giving a better idea as to whether that all makes sense. And I'd be willing to volunteer for that ad hoc if the board approves.
I'd be willing to volunteer also, President Farmer. I think that having had a little bit of opportunity to look through some of the kinds of things that affect these in a kind of a hopscotch way with the affordable housing and so forth, I think that Director Pearson and I could probably be effective in taking a look at what offerings has been brought by staff as far as a new suggested retrofit program.
Okay, well, I just want to make this comment that since this issue, came to our attention a few months back, and it was obviously with regard to the retrofit program, something that, while it was initially presented by Ms. Bland, staff member Ms. Bland, I'm the board president, I'd requested that it be an agenda item so we could have further understanding of this particular issue. And I hope Vice President Steidel doesn't mind, but if I can be so bold, I'd like to be the person that participates on this particular item, along with Director Pearson, if nobody objects.
President Farmer?
Yes, Director Rice.
I appreciate your willingness to serve on this committee. I think that the matching of somebody who's working on an ad hoc committee related to affordable housing and the person who's the chair of the R&I committee is an appropriate match for this. I also want to urge whoever the committee ends up being after we make a decision knows that there was a fairly in-depth study and analysis of water efficiency and what kinds of things that this district found as policy based on data. We passed the water efficiency program policy in 2013. And I would urge us to not move too far from that until we have better data from the new team that's going to be working on that. So, because we already have policies for one thing, water efficiency, we have a policy already in place approved by the board. It may be that policy needs to be changed or updated, but I would urge us to not forget it exists. Also, I'm happy to provide as a member of that Water Emergency Alternative Citizens Committee, that was the full name of it, in 2009-10. I was the recording secretary, and I'm happy to pass my notes along. I'll pass them along through Haley or the GM, whichever way staff wants me to, whoever I should send it to. I'll make sure that you have those notes because we did put out a final report. No action was taken, but we did spend a long time talking about demand and how do you manage demand when you have big families and then houses that are giant but have one person in them and things like that. So that might be useful.
All right. Thank you, Director Rice. And thank you for your comment with regard to having someone from the R&I committee and someone that's also been involved with the affordable housing issue being on the same committee probably is probably makes more sense in the long run. So thank you for that suggestion. So yes, Director Howell.
Oh, thank you. I would actually prefer that this go to the R&I committee first if they have time. And let me explain why. I don't think we need to be, the fact that they're looking at our code and possibly talking about changing it, I don't think that it's necessarily the case that therefore other people besides the board members can't look at the code and make good suggestions about it. The reason I would like this to go, I'd like to see it before the R&I first, if they have time, is that it gives this is a very important issue, and it's something that is not well understood by members of the public, and nor is there a lot of, I would not say, I think we'd have a hard time finding a lot of agreement amongst members of the public regarding this. So it's an opportunity to bring this forward and discuss it in that forum before it comes to us. I would actually appreciate that, because I often, and this is going to come up later, I have found these standing committee meetings to be very, very useful as an observer, where I can see how other people are reacting, and often people are having opinions and ideas which never occurred to me. And also, the staff is often able to give much more detailed presentations at those standing committee meetings than they are at our meetings. So it's one additional time, and because this is not an emergency, we do have a policy in place. I don't think that we need to rush it forward. And so if Director Pearson would consider it for that committee, again, it's a lot of work, and I don't know if there is enough time. But if there were, I think it would be very valuable to get more people engaged with this. Ultimately, it will come to us. And it will come, and no doubt there will be a subcommittee of our board at that time to review everything else and come forth with a recommendation. But it's still an option to get the public's input on this, and they have more than one shot at it. Whereas if we do it here, they only got one shot, and that's it.
If I may respond, President Farmer, I think if we do go that direction, we really need to be more clear about what we mean by review.
Good.
Having a committee of the board of board members, we do have a general understanding of what it is we're what we mean by review, but putting it to a standing committee, well, I am super appreciative, I'd like to say again, of every volunteer that has been helping us on these standing committees. It may be the case that a much more focused idea of what we mean by review would have to be yeah. undertaken, for which we, an ad hoc committee of the board, they could do that part, and then you know then we can refer. But I understand where you're coming from, but I suspect that might be, we end up sending something that provides unfocus again.
So let me ask Director Pearson, so I see he has his hand up, but let me ask you, David, considering how busy your subcommittee is at this time, would you be able to take on this additional obligation?
I don't think that's the issue. I think that these two chapters, right, are very extensive. And as Director Reyes pointed out, we would need to be very specific about what we wanted the R&I committee to do. And these two chapters, along with a couple other chapters in our ordinance, are going to get really looked at very carefully during the Urban Water Master Plan review, which is part of what the R&I committee is currently, you know, tasked with, is working with the staff and the consultant to move that ahead. And I think there's going to be some broad revisions to both of these chapters and other chapters in our ordinance because of the Urban Water Plan review. And I think right now that this review with an ad hoc committee really needs to be focused on the change in process and form that the staff brought forward, and allow the more broad review of those two chapters to happen during the water management plan update.
Okay.
Thank you, Director Pearson. Did someone else wish to make a comment?
I would move that we appoint Director Pearson and Vice President Steidel to be an ad hoc committee per this agenda item and review Ordinance 2-2020, amending the sections so that we can get a better handle on what it is that we need. That is a horrible motion. Let me start again. Can I please start again, Haley? I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I move that we appoint Director Pearson and Vice President Steidel to an ad hoc committee to review these specific sections 4.16 and 4.20 of the Municipal Code relating to retrofit inspections and verifications.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
I'll second it.
All right, Haley. It's all yours.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
David Pearson? Or Director Pearson? Sorry, I'm reading name tags.
Aye.
Vice President Steidel?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. Thank you. Thank you all for a very pertinent discussion and objective discussion on that item. Let's move on to, I believe it's item 5D. And I know folks in the audience are waiting to discuss this one. So, General Manager Weigel, would you introduce item 5D, please?
Yes, President Farmer. Agenda item 5D is discussion and consideration of the issue of board member participation at Finance, Policy, and Resources Infrastructure Committee meetings. Staff is recommending that the Board of Directors review this staff report and consider and discuss the issue of board member participation at meetings of the Finance, Policy, and Resources Infrastructure Committees. I'll add also that Tim Carmel put this report together. It was pretty significant, and as he had most of the interaction on this subject. Tim, if you want to add anything to that. Actually, I think we have to take board comment first before we get into it.
Yeah, I was just going to ask for that. So, Haley, no doubt we have at least a couple of folks wishing to make public comment on this item.
Yeah, right now I have three members of the public that wishes to speak, and the first member is Elizabeth Benhausen.
Oh, wait, Harry.
Yes.
I got Tim.
Harry, President Farmer, can I give a little brief staff report, perhaps?
Oh, I'm sorry, Tim. You didn't immediately respond to General Manager Weigel, so I didn't realize you needed to speak. So go right ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, President Farmer. First, I want to thank Tina Dickison for all her hard work. She plays a very important role in this community, and she really is tenacious. We disagree on this and other issues, but I recognize these disagreements and dialogues often yield important results and shine a light on important issues. The Brown Act defines advisory committees such as the Resource and Infrastructure, Finance and Policy Committees as legislative bodies pursuant to Government Code Section 54950B. The term standing committee under the Brown Act means a committee composed of less than a quorum of the legislative body with continuing subject matter jurisdiction or a fixed meeting schedule created by formal action of the legislative body. For instance, if one of the board's ad hoc committees had continuing subject matter jurisdiction or a fixed meeting schedule through formal board action under the Brown Act, it would be considered a standing committee. Under the Brown Act, our three committees are not considered standing committees. The Brown Act generally prohibits more than a quorum of the legislative body from meeting, except at an open and noticed meeting that complies with the Brown Act. There are some exceptions. A majority of the legislative body could attend and participate in an open and noticed meeting of another legislative body at the local agency, so long as they don't discuss amongst themselves business of a specific nature within the subject matter jurisdiction of the legislative body. Our committees are legislative bodies, and this exception applies to them. It's contained in Government Code Section 54952.2C4. There's another exception that allows a majority of the members of the legislative body to attend a standing committee meeting of that body, but they can't participate. That's subsection C6. I'm going to read a portion of the Attorney General's Office publication called Brown Act Open Meetings for Local Legislative Bodies that addresses this very narrow issue. When a majority of the legislative body attends an open and noticed meeting of another legislative body of the same or a different local agency, the legislative body is not deemed to be conducting a meeting so long as the members in attendance do not discuss among themselves, other than a part of the scheduled meeting, issues of a specific nature related to the subject matter jurisdiction of the body. This exception, which is contained in Section 54952.2C4, does not apply when a majority of the members of a parent legislative body attend a meeting of a standing committee of the parent body. However, Section 54952.2C6 specifically addresses this issue. It provides that a majority of the parent body may attend an open notice meeting of a standing committee so long as the members who are not members of the standing committee and which cause a majority of the parent body to be present attend only as observers. The reason for this is fairly simple. It's because a member of a legislative body participating in a meeting of a standing committee could create the impression that the standing committee meeting was a meeting of the legislative body itself. I've discussed this issue with many municipal attorneys, and they're all in agreement. Now, having said that, the board can establish its own policy that would prohibit participation of a majority of directors or any director in meetings of the Resource and Infrastructure Policy or Finance Committees, such as Dr. Bettenhausen suggests. I think such a policy should be strongly considered. Thank you. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Haley, if we could move on to public comment now.
Sure. So Elizabeth Bettenhausen would like to speak, so I'm going to get her in. Elizabeth, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Am I still muted?
No, you're okay.
We can hear you. Go right ahead, Elizabeth.
Okay, I just clicked the mic again and shouldn't have. Thank you very much, Mr. President, and Ms. Dodson for keeping order in the public comment. As you know, Board, I sent you a brief email this morning, and the only thing I'd like to do now is simply to read it to you so that people who are listening to the meeting can also understand my comment. Dear Directors, on your agenda today, 5D is a discussion of how you participate in meetings of the three standing committees you have created to study matters you assign to them and then report back to you. At least one of you will participate in each meeting of the standing committee as the chairperson of the standing committee. Please discuss today and take official action at your next meeting. And I put it that way because a decision is not part of the agenda item as it's worded. Please discuss today and take official action at your next meeting or your first meeting in July to make the content of this paragraph the official policy of the Board of Directors of CCSD. And then I simply quote what Mr. Carmel has already read. And all I did then in my recommended wording as a possible motion for you is to change and make specific that it's CCSD. And so I suggest that you adopt this motion, that the directors of Cambria Community Services District may not ask questions or make statements while attending a meeting of a standing committee of the Board of Directors unless she or he is the chairperson of the standing committee. Attendance by any other director is a limited one in such circumstances, restricted to watching and listening. End of my suggested motion. I thank you very much for considering this carefully. The confusion that certainly currently reigns, and I listen to a lot of these meetings, the confusion that currently reigns at these meetings in this regard can be turned into glowing transparency with one quick action. Thank you very much for your public service. I'm sincerely yours, Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen. Haley, the second comment?
Yes, the second public member that would like to speak is Christine Heinrichs. Christine, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Thank you. And thank you for bringing attention to this Brown Act issue. The intent of the Brown Act is that the public's business should be conducted in public. Your discussion of the issues and careful attention to adhering to its provisions helps the board be transparent in its service and invites the public's confidence. Thank you for airing this issue.
Thank you. Thank you, Christine. That was quick. The next public comment, Haley?
Yes, the next member of the public that wishes to speak is Tina Dickerson.
All right. Ms. Dickerson, go right ahead.
Thank you, Haley. Thank you. Thank you, President Farmer, for having this item placed on today's agenda. I believe it is important and worthy of everyone's time. It is my hope that the board, having read the agenda material and all that Mr. Carmel has put together, and I thank him, will be able to find clarity to satisfy the rules of the Brown Act and to not have anyone question what is allowed and what is not, as well as what is transparent and what is not. So that going forward, we don't have this confusion, which seems to have come about more since we've been conducting our meetings by Zoom. But let me just say this, that even when we look at, just take for, I'm not going to go over what Mr. Carmel has already read, and I've certainly made it very clear in my correspondence with him and with members of the board and general manager. But if you go to the legal opinion of Mr. Lundgren, even back in 1996, it was brought forth because a fourth member of a seven-member body there was an issue there with the fourth person attending. So then the legislature responded to that. And then it happened again in 97, and this legal opinion was issued. So I'm just going to go and to the conclusion of where the question was raised for the legal opinion. May members of the legislative body of a local public agency ask questions or make statements while attending a meeting of a standing committee of the legislative body, in quote, as observers, end quote? The conclusion arrived, and this is just putting it very simply, but I'll read the conclusion to that question. Members of the legislative body of a local public agency may not ask questions or make statements while attending a meeting of a standing committee of the legislative body as observers. The issue is that you were called these bodies, the three standing committees, you've called them standing committees. So when I go to the Brown Act, I find under number six, I'm going to put C6, that's what they are addressing. Now, Mr. Carmel does have a different interpretation, and I get it, but I think if you've got language directly addressing standing committees, that makes the most sense, and it gives real clarity, and it's going to avoid these issues going forward. The board has two meetings a month. They have lots of time for interaction, discussion. The standing committees are there for a purpose. The board has designated them with tasks, and they serve in an advisory capacity. Mr. Carmel is everything you've said, Tim, I don't disagree with you, but I do think we need to get something really clear here, because I don't think it's fair to have three directors of the board speak on an agenda item when you've got a quorum, when that's not allowed if you're at some other meeting. It's just not allowed. So I thank you very much for spending the time on this. I spend a lot of time too, as you can tell. And I hope we can, what Dr. Bettenhausen has suggested, I think makes a lot of sense. And I hope that the board will see that as showing clarity and also simplifying the whole process. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Dickerson. Let me open this up to board comment and questions.
President Farmer, I actually have a couple more members of the public that wishes to speak.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Haley. I thought you just said three, but obviously other people got excited about this particular issue.
Go ahead. The next member of the public that wishes to speak is Karen Dean.
All right. Ms. Dean, go right ahead.
Hi. I appreciate the board taking up this issue. There has been quite a bit of confusion on this. Back when the standing committees were first formed, first finance and infrastructure, there were two directors on those standing committees. And at that time, it was understood that if a third director attended a standing committee meeting where there were two directors already as part of the committee, that director was only able to attend to observe and was not to speak. That seems to have changed. Now we have one director on each standing committee now, and quite often we have two directors attend the meeting as observers. There are times with some of the standing committees where the chair of another standing committee is there, and since we kind of pass things back and forth between the committees before it goes to the board, sometimes it's necessary to ask a question of the chair of another committee. Is that allowed? I'd like to know if that is allowed. That's just my question. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dean. Who else would wish to speak, Haley?
The next member of the public that wishes to speak is a call-in user, so I'm not sure who it is, so I'm just going to bring them in.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, board and public. I'm Julie Tacker, and I'm very interested in this subject. I first want to congratulate all of your public speakers on their knowledge and their interest in this item. I think there's two things going on here. I think a Brown Act violation occurred when three board members spoke on the same item at a committee. And that is where you have a quorum of the board influencing and deliberating on an item that will come before the whole body at another time. The second issue is what Mr. Carmel is asking you to do today, is to develop a policy, but it sounds like there's semantics involved, advisory versus standing, and your district has chosen to call them standing committees, as evidenced by the previous item where you had an amendment to the Resources and Infrastructure Standing Committee bylaws just a few moments ago. So the policy, if it's standing or advisory, I think that is what needs to be clarified. But always, you cannot have three members of your board deliberating or influencing an item that will come before the full body at a board meeting. So good luck to you all. But I think, again, there are two issues that before you today. And the one that's not really being addressed is that the violation occurred should not happen again. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. I would like to call on Director Howell, who is the chairperson of the policy committee where this possible Brown Act violation took place. But, you know, what I'd like to do, if I could just state, since both Ms. Dickinson and especially Ms. Tacker just said that there were three members of the board there, and two of those spoke on the same agenda item. That's not really what happened, especially because it was Vice President Steidel and myself. We were the two people that spoke, and we addressed two totally different issues, and they weren't even agenda items. I called in to correct a comment that had been made by somebody that had called in and made a public comment, and Ms. Steidel called in to correct a comment, a misunderstanding that was being made by Ted Key, one of the committee members. So they weren't the same agenda item. One of the items wasn't even an agenda item, if not both of them. I just want to clarify that before we move forward. I was going to hand this off to Director Howell, but I see Director Rice has her hand up. So go right ahead.
Thank you. I appreciate that, President Farmer, because I don't think this should be a trial for any particular board member or committee chair and what may or may not have happened in a particular meeting, because we're speaking about trying to ensure transparency, that we're not doing things. The Brown Act is intended to ensure that things aren't done behind closed doors, that things are done in public. These committee meetings are noticed and they are public. So I don't feel like in the spirit of the law, that it violates the spirit, especially if there isn't an ongoing discussion, but rather a clarifying question or comment. That all said, when we, you and I, President Farmer, were working on the board bylaws, which, as Ms. Dickinson mentioned, were passed in March of this year, there was an item under the standing committees that spoke to board member participation when they're not the chair of a standing committee. And it was removed before it was brought to the board because we couldn't come to an agreement about how we approached that particular issue, because we all do recognize that even an appearance of a violation of the Brown Act is something we want to avoid, much less an actual violation, which, again, we don't need to litigate or put anybody on trial for today, because what we're trying to do is ensure transparency, ensure that we're building trust and not doing things that people think it are in some way outside the lines. If this is simply because people feel like there's a Brown Act violation, but it's not things that we're not meeting in a smoky room. It's public. Other members of the public hear when these things happen, which, again, we do not want to create the appearance of a violation, which is why I thought we should have a clause in our board bylaws that spoke to participation by non-chairperson members at standing committees. And I take Tina's, and I think all three speakers probably spoke to whether we call it, or sorry, I think three of the speakers spoke to whether we call it advisory or standing. I think the intention of this board is to be as public as possible, as clear as possible about what we're doing. We do rely on these committees as being advisory, and if we want that rule to apply, then we should change our language of our bylaws and how we refer to the committees. Otherwise, I don't have any objection to doing this. I also think that it's something we should probably include in the bylaws. And at the very least, we need to have clear guidelines as board members, because, I mean, I'll fess up. I attended a meeting and somebody said something that was off target or wasn't correct, and so I wanted to clarify it. So I raised my hand, I got called on, and I talked. And there were no guidelines. I didn't know that was not correct, because there's some areas of the Brown Act that are more gray than black and white. And I certainly would have kept my mouth shut and my headset off my head had I known in attending that meeting that I shouldn't be doing that. It's also helpful for the chairperson to have that as a clear guideline. And with the prospect of probably at least two new directors, or at least one new director, we need to have the expectations of what the board should be doing related to this thing of standing committees, advisory committees, however you want to. We want to move forward with that. But we do need clarity and guidelines for what are the expectations that directors do and do not do, and not just from the letter of the law, but through the spirit of the law.
So, Director Rice, would you suggest that we go back and revisit the bylaws and perhaps put something in there with regard to this particular issue?
That is one approach. I actually think that it's more important to get a guideline that we can put into place. If the proper place to put it is in the bylaws and not as a separate thing, then yes, we should probably take up the bylaws. And I still have the language for that item. I'm willing to pass it along so that we can get it done fairly quickly. But I'd like to hear from other directors what their thoughts are now that we've had further discussion about it.
Thank you, Director Rice. Yes, Vice President Steidel.
Whatever the result may be from our discussion, as far as a clarifying statement or position, I do think it should be in the bylaws, as that would hold our criteria for performance as board members within a single place, rather than it just hanging off a document and potentially overlooked or not understood. everything in the same place, and that way everybody's reading the same thing. There is one of the questions that was asked in public comment I found interesting, and actually I'd like to get some feedback, I don't know, maybe from Mr. Carmel on, but Karen Dean had asked about the ability to, if the chair of another committee is in attendance, even just listening, during a committee's meeting, and it would be helpful to have a clarification or a statement from the other chair, is it okay to ask the question? So if there's a committee chairperson and who's an observer rather than the committee that's currently in session, can they ask a question of that chair?
Okay.
Would you like me to answer that, President Farmer?
Right ahead, Mr. Carmel.
Yes, Vice President Steidel, you could ask that question.
Yeah.
Under the Brown Act.
Thank you, Mr. Carmel.
Well, I guess it's my turn.
I was about to call on you, even though you didn't have your hand up.
That's right. Well, well, being as it was our meeting that raised this issue, first of all, I do want to say that no Brown Act violation took place, no matter how you choose to interpret the code. And anyone that listens to that meeting all the way through can tell that. It is true that there was a single agenda item under discussion, but the two directors did not speak to that agenda item at all. They spoke on entirely different matters. And I have to tell you, as chairman, if one of them had attempted to speak on the item, I would have ruled them out of order. So that gets me to my next point. I'm falling with Mr. Carmel on this in his interpretation, which was the paragraph 4, which is that, and I think it's highly unfortunate, and who knew we were going to get into this, that we called these advisory committees standing committees. A big mistake. They are advisory committees. They are not standing committees of the board. A standing, and this is for everybody listening, a standing committee of the board is made up only of board members. And that is what is referred to. These advisory, now called standing committees, which I'm going to, at a later date, move that the name changed, these are legislative bodies of the same agency as the CCSD, but they are creatures of the CCSD, but they are not part of the CCSD. So this is why I believe Mr. Carmel's interpretation governs. We can let the lawyers argue back and forth. I'm sure Ms. Tacker may have a different point of view, as does Ms. Dickerson. I think, however, from what I was hearing of the reading of the Attorney General's opinion, I think that we are all right. We have not yet created a violation. On the other hand, what is said and is very true, we do not want to have an appearance of doing something behind the back. So there is a very, very great need for guidance. The one thing that I would say at this point, however, is twofold. First of all, as a director, and I've already mentioned this before, it's incredibly useful for me as a director to attend these other meetings. And believe me, it saves a lot of time in these meetings. If I get an explanation of the budget by listening to the Finance Committee, or I get an explanation for the PG&E project or whatever Mr. D'Enzo may have on his plate at the R&I committee, and that saves an incredible amount of time. And the additional opportunity for public comment is great. But I would be very, very sad if I was ordered to stop attending these other meetings, because it's incredibly useful. So that's one thing. The second thing is, as chairman of the committee, I would prefer, and this gets directly to Ms. Dean's question, I would prefer that if I see that there is a director in attendance and that director could lend something having to do with of a factual nature regarding a situation, then I would like to be able to call on that director or in the case that was brought up, in the case of coordinating meetings, another reason why it would be nice if, rather than have to, Director Steidel was attending and I was an R&I chair and she was attending, it would help us to be able to negotiate our meeting times with her present at that time. So I'd be very sorry to give that up. It's a very useful thing. On the other hand, I think that perhaps the directors do need guidance. But I really think, and this I think is, it's really, it does need to be in the committee bylaws. We do need to do something. But it is up to the chair of the committee to make the determination as to whether a Brown Act violation is being done. And it's the chair of the committee that needs to watch that and be sure that it doesn't happen. That's a responsibility. That's what you have to do. And this is what came about during that R&I meeting, because at that time, the attendees, Mr. President Farmer and Vice President Steidel, could not see each other. So after President Farmer had made his comment, which was on one matter, I needed to warn Director Steidel that there was another director attending because she couldn't tell. And it was at that point that we received the guidance from Mr. Weigel, having talked to Mr. Carmel, that it felt that there was not going to be a violation. But in any case, what each of those directors said were not related to each other. It was not a matter that was before the committee. It had to do with providing information to the committee and nothing more. I think I've said enough on that. You can kind of see where I'm falling on this. I do think we do need some bylaw changes. And so I think maybe this does need to be brought back, probably sooner than later. But we've all been given the guidance, I think, that we need to be very aware. And the other thing, again, to our friends out there in the world, these meetings, for whatever you may think, they are public. You can see us. In fact, you can see us a lot better now than you could when we were sitting in a room. You can even see us roll our eyes these are very public meetings. We are not doing anything behind closed doors. And we just need to be very clear about that. But I do understand the need to avoid even the appearance of smoke-filled rooms and dealing behind people's backs. So I'm looking forward to a bylaw change.
Thank you, Director Howell. Maybe in the name of the committees, if nothing else, right? Director Pearson, go right ahead.
Thank you, President Farmer. I fall in with Ms. Bettenhausen on this one. I think we do need to have something that states that we should be observers at these meetings and not speak. I think it should be a bylaw, and I would welcome the ad hoc committee that currently exists of Director Rice and President Farmer to revitalize that particular bylaw, and maybe we can act on that one at the first meeting in July. But I personally, I'm a little concerned that even though all the directors would be with good intention and everything, if a director is recognized at a meeting and for some reason states an opinion that is then heard by the two other directors that are attending, that could constitute, basically a violation. So I would like to see the directors be observers and allow the staff and the chairman of the committee to police the factual matters of what's going on in the committee and be done with it. But again, I think referring this to the bylaw ad hoc committee and having them come up with a bylaw that we can pass and put into place would be the best idea. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Rice?
Mr. Carmel can correct me if I'm wrong about this, but I think because we finished our work on the bylaws, that ad hoc committee would have been dissolved, but I don't know if formal action has to be taken to do that. Mr. Carmel?
That's correct.
So we would have to make a new ad hoc committee, even if it was the same directors.
That's correct.
So are we able to do that? We can't do that at this time, right?
No, it's not on the agenda, but we could probably slap this on next week's agenda fairly easily if the agenda hasn't been posted.
Right. Okay, thank you. I kind of knew that, but I figured hearing it from you, it was more official. So thank you, Mr. Carmel. I think we've had a... No, this is open. This is a...
Vice President Steidel has her hand up.
Thank you, Vice President Steidel.
Right. I want the picture
instead. Thank you, Director Rice. Since, go right ahead, Cindy. My apologies.
Not a problem. I think that there's one more element of this, and that's to determine whether or not we should be looking at changing any reference to standing committee to be advisory committee. And that really hadn't been discussed a lot. There are probably pros and cons to it, but I do think that we need to address that and not leave it by the wayside.
Yeah, I would tend to agree, especially, I mean, Director Howell brought it up, but when you're thinking about it, well, the term, whatever term you're using, is supposed to define something. And standing committee, well, heck, that could be anything. Advisory committee, that pretty much clarifies why that committee even exists. So that would probably be a really good idea.
So can I get a little clarity here? Mr. Carmel, you're saying that we can't appoint a ad hoc committee to address this issue at this meeting?
Well, when I look at the agenda description, discussion and consideration of the issue of board member participation at finance, policy and resource and infrastructure committee meetings, I don't see a way to jimmy it in there.
But we could direct staff to have this come back, and if a majority of the board agrees that the issue of the naming of the committees also be addressed as part of that, that would be okay.
I was just writing up an agenda description for next week's meeting, so so that you could create that ad hoc committee and have them draft the bylaw.
Okay.
The Brown Act is very rigid, and I apologize for being the one that has to try to interpret it.
Oh no, that's
we apologize for you.
may I ask a question also, Mr. Carmel? Is there any reason why we should not call these advisory committees? Is there some reason why we shouldn't do that?
No, they are advisory. There's no doubt they're advisory committees.
Okay, I just wanted to be sure.
You know, the use of the term standing committee in this context meant permanent.
Yeah.
With continuing subject matter jurisdiction.
Got it.
If I could just make a comment here, and obviously this was a very lively issue out there in the community, and we've heard many comments today, and it's been, like I say, a topic of discussion. But if we were just go back 2 or 3 years when we had the very, how could we say it? I don't want to use the term secretive. Let's just say not very public ad hoc committees, and the progress that we've made since then, and having discussions like this, I realize that there are always going to be people that are skeptical of things that the board does or doesn't do. But I'd like to think that this particular dialogue, conversation that we've had on this, like I said, rather controversial issue, has maybe affirmed people in the sense that this particular board is open and willing to discuss issues of controversy or whatever to develop more trust with the community, which is something I think we've all wanted to do since we've been on the board. So I just want to add that. Yes, Director Rice. Need to unmute yourself.
It's not important. We can address it. We can address it when we cover this at next week's meeting.
All right. Thank you so much. So we've had the discussion and consideration, and I hope that everyone that called in and observed and made public comment that you feel that we had a very thorough discussion of this item. And I want to thank everybody that did call in and make a comment.
Excuse me, President Farmer, yes. I did notice that Tina Dickinson still had her hand up, and so I don't know if that meant she had an additional comment or it just hadn't been taken down.
Thank you. You know, I meant to address that earlier, and then I spaced it out. I'll tell you what, Haley, you know, normally we'd ask somebody to put another public comment slip, but considering this is Tina, and she's the one that is kind of push this item forward into the consciousness of all of us. Tina, why don't you go, if you don't mind, Haley. Tina, why don't you go ahead and, if you wish, make a brief comment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, President Farmer. Listening to this discussion, so if you want to change the name from Standing Committee to Advisory Committees, then I would say, you are all in, it seems to me, for the long term in each one of your committees. How then can you be considered advisory committees that are generally ad hoc, short term? So now why, no, please don't interrupt me. Sorry. Please don't interrupt Director Howell. Sorry. So if there's a differentiation, and if I understood it correctly, that the advisory maybe it was Mr. Carmel that said it, advisory would be for more short term. So that's the differentiation, but why you'd have standing committees, that standing would be for longer and longer term. And I just want to read from your bylaws. Under meetings, this is all it says under 9.4A, all committees shall comply with the provisions of the Ralph M. Brown Act concerning the calling of public meetings and the board and committee bylaws. There is no government code assigned. And in fact, in all of your bylaws, there's only one government code, and that is regarding expenses for attending meetings. That's the only government code in your entire bylaws. So I would suggest that you put a Brown Act government code within the body of your, when you're changing the bylaws, if that's what happens. But I do really think, be careful, because and I would hope Mr. Carmel could address the real difference between standing and advisory, and is that the way you really want to go? I want to thank you all for your input and for addressing this, because it really is important. Thanks so much, everyone.
All right. Thank you, Tina. All right. Well, it looks like we'll be discussing this next week, and there'll be no doubt at least one public comment on it. So let's move forward finally with the final item on regular business, item 5E. And General Manager Weigold, if you could introduce this item, please.
Yes, President Farmer. Agenda item 5E is the discussion and consideration of approval of a letter of support for the Chumash National Marine Sanctuary. Staff is recommending that the Board of Directors discuss and consider approval of the attached Chumash National Marine Sanctuary letter of support for submission as an electronic public comment.
Haley, do we have any public comment on this item?
Yes, we do have one member of the public that wishes to speak on this item, and it's Christine Heinrichs. Let me get her in.
Ms. Heinrichs, go right ahead. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Director Rice, for your articulate letter of support for the Chumash Heritage National Marine Sanctuary. The emphasis on the importance of climate effects on the ocean is welcome. Would it be possible, however, to add some recognition of the cultural significance of this stretch of ocean to the Chumash people, such as these words from the Chumash Sanctuary website? Being near the ocean is unlike other places. It has a magical quality that allows people and families the opportunity to create unforgettable memories. We celebrate our spiritual blessing ceremonies, community gatherings, holidays, weddings, births, and memorials to life here. We want it protected by a sanctuary so that our friends, families, and communities can continue to connect with grandmother oceans in a clean, safe, and healthy environment. I just ask that some addition be made recognizing that. But otherwise, I am very grateful for this, and I am glad that the CSD is supporting the National Marine Sanctuary. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Christine. I don't know. Do we need to open this up for discussion? Would anyone on the board? Yes, Director Rice.
So first thing is I appreciate the board taking this up, considering, and I would like to make a certain distinction that's kind of important. This is a letter of support to continue this in the inventory. The way that sanctuaries work, the process is you have to qualify to get into the inventory, and then if you haven't been made a sanctuary by the end of 5 years, you have to get that extended, and if it's not extended for another 5 years, you have to start from scratch again. Mm-hmm. So we don't want them to have to start from scratch again. They've put in a lot of effort, and I don't know what happened. Something happened in 2016 that essentially ate up almost all 5 years, and no work has been done on this. It might have been a change of administration in DC, maybe. But specifically to Ms. Heinrich's comment and for the public that might still be here, individuals are also encouraged to go to the link, and I put the link in the report. Individual human beings are also very welcome to submit comment, and if you would like to see that comment submitted, that Ms. Heinrichs could actually write her own letter also. I'll be writing my own letter as a personal individual citizen that won't be coming from the district, but this will be one that comes from district letterhead. And since it would start the northern border is halfway in the middle of Cambria, I mean out in the ocean, but so I appreciate the board taking consideration to submit this letter. There's about 200 letters that have already been submitted, and the deadline is the 15th of June. So if you're an individual that would like to comment, this program is through NOAA, which is the National Atmospheric and Oceanic, I can't remember the last O, A, Association, something. Can't remember. NOAA, N-O-A-A. I'm sure Mr. Weigold knows.
Administration.
Thank you. I'm hoping that we get this passed and shortest meeting yet.
I don't know if it's the shortest meeting yet. It doesn't feel like it at this moment, but however, I don't see any other member of the board wishing to speak at this moment. I just want to make this comment that, in some fashion, in some unconscious manner, recently we've had, of course, the creation of the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, and then the Cambria State Marine Park, the first state marine park in California. And so whether it's this particular area here, the Central Coast of California, thankfully, in some small fashion or larger fashion, acknowledging the magic of Mother Earth, the specialness that she has for our existence on this planet, you know, somehow in our rush, competitive, materialistic society, we have forgotten the fact that reverence for Mother Earth, which the indigenous peoples had, obviously to a much greater degree than we've been doing. Perhaps our consciousness is being raised with every event that takes place around us, not just the specialness of humanity, but the specialness of Mother Earth and the relationship that we share with one another. So with that thought in mind, seeing no other comments from board members, would anybody like to make a motion on this particular item, please?
I move approval.
I'd like to move that we approve the CCSD letter of support for the Chumash National Marine Sanctuary.
I would second.
Okay. All right, thank you. So we have a motion and a second. Haley, if you would call the roll, please.
Sure. Vice President Seidel?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Howe?
Aye.
Director Pearson? He said aye. President Farmer?
Aye. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for that unanimous support. I very much appreciate it.
Thank you for bringing that forward and for providing the letter, Director Rice. I appreciate it.
Well, the Director Rice is, you know, in her final term, her final year of 8 years of wonderful service to our community on this board. And this is certainly one of the high points of our participation, at least at this point in time, at the district. So thank you. Thank you again, Director Rice. I should say Amanda. You know, sometimes we get too formal here. Thank you, Amanda.
So, well, formal is fine. I don't have a problem with formal.
Okay. moving on to future agenda items. Anybody have any? I think we already have at least one future agenda item that we've already made during this meeting. Does anyone on the board or any staff member wish to make a comment here?
I think there are two. If I remember correctly, we've got the public forum issue that we talked at the top of the meeting after public comment, and then the appointing of bylaws,
right,
ad hoc, right?
Right.
Yeah, I think Mr. Carmel had already kind of jumped on those, so that's the reason I didn't comment on them. But thank you, Director Rice. So I think what I'll do at this moment in time is adjourn to closed session. We're going to be doing the public employee performance evaluation of Mr. Carmel, our district counsel. So first, before we do adjourn, let me ask you if there are any public comment on this closed session item. Haley, do you have anything? Yeah.
We do have one member of the public that wishes to speak, Christine Heinrichs.
All right. We'll be informal. Christine, go right ahead.
Thank you. I asked the board to consider thanking Tim Carmel for his service and canceling his contract. His legal advice has often not served the board well. I asked the board to seek another attorney to serve as its legal counsel. Examples that are most troubling are his failure to advise the board against getting involved in lawsuits. The current lawsuit against the Emergency Water Supply Project contractor, CDM Smith, could and should have been avoided by careful vetting of contracts along the way. The board agreed to $9 million in financing for the project in a single rushed meeting in 2014. Legal advice looking out for the district's best interest could have counseled taking time to study the documents carefully rather than signing without adequate knowledge of the details of the financing, which is now generally conceded to be disadvantageous to the district. He failed to advise the district that its policy on charging the public to receive board meeting agendas was not legal until after the board received a cease and desist letter. The district has had confusion over several actions, including the 218 rate increase. The first round of notices was so flawed that the entire mailing had to be done a second time. How did he allow the board to pay off former general manager Jerry Gruber over $120,000 in terminating his contract in September 2018, when Gruber had so badly mismanaged the district that we are still untangling problems such as the failure to reconcile checking accounts for 3 years and the failure to install the influence screen at the wastewater treatment plant, the lack of backup power to essential services? Mr. Carmel has not advised the district well in these and on other occasions. I ask the board to take this opportunity to replace him. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrich. Seeing no other public comment on this item, I'm going to adjourn this meeting, and we will take 10 or 15 minute break. Anybody want to make a, do I hear 10? Do I hear 15?
10 would be good.
All right.
Up till 4:30.
4:30?
We'll be back at 4:30. Thank you. Thank you all for attending.
Okay, cool.
Thank you, Haley.